How many of you are from public health, county public health departments here? Okay. How many from Department of Environmental Health, county? Great. I'll be talking about them today, so I won't get corrected. So I'm here to talk to you about our culinary garden agreement, and I have nothing to disclose. In public health nutrition, we work a lot in access to healthy food for all residents. We look at health equity and employ strategies that really look at increasing the availability in one's environment to make healthy choices. What we see a lot of times, though, is those strategies that we employ can sometimes be in direct violation of our environmental health experts. And what I mean about that is, getting community gardens up and running. There could be some concerns in environmental health about the safety of the food, things like that. So I wanted to tell you a story about my first encounter with our environmental health. We were paying the City of San Diego Planning Department to develop an urban agricultural ordinance, and that would be to ease up the development and permitting process of community gardens and increase animal husbandry and things, and chickens, things like that. We were working with the City Planning Department for about a year, and also had resident groups really able to testify about their need for the community gardens. And all of a sudden, we got a letter from the Department of Environmental Health director saying, we are against your ordinance, and we do not approve of it. So that was my first encounter with environmental health. A lot of our advocates also have a contentious relationship, actually, with environmental health. They're used to the inspectors shutting them down or saying no to them quite a bit on some of these things. So we decided to take this conflict and turn it into healthy conflict and really develop a relationship with our environmental health in the county of San Diego. So we decided we really needed to look at what each other does and speak each other's language. We needed to widen really the environmental public health lens and look at what can we work together on. We needed to change our cultural norms in our own departments and really look at chronic disease prevention through environmental sustainability, food safety as a priority, and also looking at our food systems, laws, and regulations. Times change. We really need to look at our laws and regulations and look how to interpret those and also how to change them. So we decided to go ahead and look at one joint project together. And one of the things that a lot of us are working on are improving the school meals. So we decided to take a look at how together are we going to make a change. And a lot of our food services directors in our schools have been working a lot on local procurement of the products that are going into the school meals. And also, a lot of growth in school gardens. How many of you are involved in school gardens? One of the greatest strategies that we can do with our children to get them to eat better is to have them understand where their food comes from. And we all know that kids like to eat things that they pick. So what we wanted to see what would happen if we actually had the kids growing in the school garden and have that food being served in the school meals and in the school lunch bars, the salad bars. One of the things that we found then, again, is that the USDA and also the California Food Retail Code and a lot of the other states have the same statute, is that you have to have the food in the school meals as from an approved source. And so that was something that in the food safety and regulation, people are really confused about. What is an approved source? We didn't have anything to alleviate the fears that something coming from a school garden would be considered an approved source. So we really wanted to work with environmental health on this. And what we came up with is something that can be used all over the nation. And if you work with your environmental health, is the conditional approval for a culinary garden food source for a regulated food facility. How's that for a title? Very government, right? So basically what happens now is that any food facility, schools, hospitals, restaurants, also senior meals we're looking at, all these food facilities are actually inspected through the Department of Environmental Health. And if they would like to have an on-site culinary garden, they would get this agreement and follow the specifics. I actually brought some samples of the agreement for you, if you would like one afterwards. I don't have enough for all of you. And we looked at all kinds of guidance that needed to be followed if you're going to have the food from these culinary gardens being served in these food facilities. Water quality was one that was of much concern. Septic systems, no gardens could be laid on top of any leash lines or septic systems. Presence of animals. This was something that is more more common in the joint use gardens in school and communities. So they had to really prove that they were fencing off the school gardens. Pesticides, compost, sanitary practices, and worker sanitation. These are all available on our website as well. So one of our star students was San Diego Unified School District. They had a lot of school gardens. It's actually the fourth largest school district in the nation. And they worked very closely with their food services directors and created about they actually have 19 culinary garden agreements now. And it is amazing when the students have radishes growing and they are serving them on the salad bar. It's like viral marketing. They are like pulling their friends up and trying to get them to taste their radish. Obviously, the volume is not going to be there. So this is samples throughout the month. We use the Harvest of the Month program to highlight certain products that are grown, and it is a joy to see the kids' faces when they can share what they grew. Okay, just some considerations. These are conditional approvals that if the inspector sees some practices that are going on, that the agreement could be denied at any point. It is managed through the Department of Environmental Health inspectors' routine inspections. So they will now go beyond the kitchen and actually look at the garden area. So this is something that they've extended their duties, which is not really heard of within the Department of Environmental Health. They generally do what they're mandated to do. So our leadership has agreed that this is something that their inspectors will do. The food that is grown on that on-site culinary garden has to stay within that same on-site food facility. And also new practices may be needed to have training for kitchen staff to learn how to wash and appropriately use that produce, or it could be also training for the culinary garden staff as well to lightly process the product. We also have the Department of Environmental Health provide some supporting guidance on food safety and community gardens. This is another example of them going beyond what they are mandated to do regulatory. And I also have some more samples of that. This is another composting tips for school and community gardens as well. And then also some frequently asked questions about food safety and community gardens. Also, alternative water. They were really busy getting this all done for us. And just some new collaborative projects, excuse me, that we're working on with them is to look at culinary gardens in detention facilities. And these, we are looking at increasing the volume to really supply the food that is used in the prisoners' meal program, and to also ensure the safety of these. A lot of these food facilities do have high-risk hospitals and schools, and also the jails have high-risk populations and vulnerable. So the food safety is very, very critical in these settings. We're also going to be working with them on agricultural jurisdiction planning to ensure that they are in the loop about reading the ordinances and actually developing the ordinances for jurisdictions to include food safety practices. We're actually conducting a lot of farm-to-institution workshops with them, which is, again, additional to what they usually do. We are conducting a tour of these workshops for actual farmers and growers, as well as community garden collaboratives, and also the food services directors. And the new one, I was excited to hear your talk. We're going to be working with them on corner store conversions. They also inspect a lot of the retail food facilities in our city, and so they're going to be developing a lot of guidance for these corner store conversions. And that's it. So any questions? Yeah, so these have to be on the property that the food facility is on. So it has, if you are a resident that wanted a garden on the facility, you could enter into an agreement to do that. Good question. Mainly the school garden coordinators are master gardeners, or they're folks that actually know what they're doing. If they don't, we actually have some regional educational garden center trainings for people who would like to get into this type of gardening. And it's a pretty regimented workshops for them. So. Technical question from the panel.
How far does a garden have to be from a septic tank or a leach line?
That's a great question. they are very, very sensitive to that environmental health. And so, actually, Deirdre, do you know? Nope. I have my epidemiologist in the back there. So, I can find out for you.
Oh, yeah. That'd
okay.
be great.
I'll be emailing you. Okay. Oh.
Yes, I'm from the Northeast. We have a lot of school gardens. I just ran into some union issues around maintaining the property there. So you had like volunteer parents and so forth coming in and were told to stop because this was the responsibility of the facilities people for the schools. So I'm just wondering if you have any advice around that.
That's an interesting question. No, I don't have any advice on that. Union issues are sticky, and I would go to the school administration and see if you can work that out with them. Thank you.
Neighborhoods in New York City, so they're very specific. The area that we actually go to, which is the corner stores that we work with, are all within those neighborhoods, and they have politics and the population that we actually talk to are all going to be customers from those corner stores. And so those are the only people we talk to. And so that determined our sample. And so we were always looking to see whether or not their demographics were significantly different from what we would expect. And so the average age and all the Hispanic and Black African American, that fit in perfectly with our population. When you're talking about the prohibiting discounts versus taxes, has that been tried anywhere? Is there any?
I think it's now policy in tobacco in New York City. I'm just coming from there that they're not allowing discounts on tobacco. And yeah, their rates for tobacco smoking are going down and tobacco purchases. In other areas, like, getting two drinks for one, it's prohibited in a lot of states, specials on alcohol. And it seems like, any restriction on accessibility helps reduce consumption, helps people moderate their consumption. And that's really what we mean for food.
This is a question for the healthy corner stores or the healthy food environment. I've been noticing that a number of the stores have ads that pray for redemption at food stands. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes the foods that are displayed on those posters are probably the least healthiest food you know about. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think for the corner stores, they actually don't seem to have any limitations on what food stamp purchasers, people who are using food stamp can purchase. And so they're actually pretty broad in terms of what they can buy. So even though the ad says, or kind of pointing towards certain types of foods, the customers are still at their own discretion in terms of what they want to buy. So there is no limit. I know for WIC, there is a limit on what can be bought with their WIC vouchers. That we haven't specifically looked at what SNAP or food stamp customers are purchasing, but we do know that most of these corner stores, it's about 70 to 90% of the customers use their SNAP benefits.
The question is not about what they're purchasing, it's about the ads that are on the front windows, and they'll have, three frozen pizzas, or
unfortunately, we don't have that much pull yet with a lot of these corner store owners to say what they should put up as advertisements. I mean, we can work towards that, but at the moment, we cannot.
Impact around the study of promoting health.
Yes,
Actually, this is already happening in Brazil because they are there is a competition between the lands. So probably there will be a huge problem in the 10 or 20 years. It already isn't really huge problem, but probably the more important problem in the next 20 years or 30 years. And the investments are very different, as I show you in investments of the government is very different. 146 billion comparing with 24, it's very different. So probably, I don't know what will happen with Brazilians' land use and food production.
For Dr. Cohen, I'm just wondering, is RAND planning on putting out a paper or a report on some of these recommendations you have for policy change?
Actually, I published a book in January called The Big Fat Crisis, The Hidden Forces Behind the Obesity Epidemic and How We Can End It. Thank you for asking me that. And it's coming out in paperback next month. It's published by Nation Books, and actually, I have a copy I can just show you.
Yeah. It looks like this. So, yeah, the last part is all about these potential policies, and the first part is the reasons why people are vulnerable to a marketing environment.
Will RAND be putting some of that, those recommendations out as well?
So I have several publications that are, you know, basically this is for the lay public, and I have a lot of academic papers, and if you email me, I can send you copies that have already been published.
Okay.
I have
another question on that for Dr. Cohen. In addition to controlling serving size, do you know of any studies or any attempts to control the density of fast food outlets?
Well, they tried to do that in South L.A. There's a ordinance that prohibited an increase in fast food outlets, and as far as I know, the evaluation has not been, it hasn't shown that there's much of a difference, because the problem is not so much, in my view, the density of the fast food outlets, it's more the excess of the junk food in the corner stores, you know, the grocery stores, the supermarkets. The fast food outlets only contribute with the meals and the, just having too many calories, and then the quality of the food that they're automatically serving, so much sugar sweetened beverages and deep fried food. So they're actually less bad than sit down restaurants, because sit down restaurants routinely have way more calories per meal, lots of free refills, unlimited bread and chips on the table. So I have people eat fast food more, but per meal, sit-down restaurant is typically worse.
Can you comment on the difference between the tobacco and alcohol food industries, not in terms of their products, but in fact?
There's no difference. the tobacco industry is diversified and bought food companies, so they know what they're doing, and they're using the same tactics, and I think the same strategies we've been using to control alcohol and tobacco consumption, we really should, start applying them to food marketing and distribution.
Trying to use these index for another areas, especially to compare areas where the strong shift toward food production comparing with the strong shift toward non-food production. So I saw a municipality where there was a strong shift toward non-food. So it's good now to compare in opposite cases, if the places where increasing food production, they are suffering from food insecurity. Probably that's a good thing to know now, to try to understand if the index can be useful, more useful, to understand this food insecurity and land use changing, this kind of thing. I think this can be a very important tool, because it's a very serious census data in Brazil is very good, so we can use this census data at the municipal level, so we can use more this index through to trying to understand the